Evening, Bodhisattvas. Welcome to our fourth annual Desert Rain Zen Desert Sunrise Spring Retreat. It's great to welcome people here and back, our far-flung friends and just a little bit flung. We have people from the Open Source and Awakened Life, so it's great to have Martha and Astrea back. We have from the Greater Pacific Zen School, Alok, down from Sedona. And I think this is right from the Northwest Soto Stream, Fred. That's good. Yeah, there you go. And then we have two people from Desert Rain Zen sitting their first full retreat with us. So Mary Ellen and Dorian, it's great to have you guys here. And Robert outside, and Donna, who've sat a lot of retreats and a lot of non-retreats with us. And I just want to say also what a joy it is to work with this leadership team. We've all been sitting together for several years now and done several retreats together. So it's a great pleasure to work with such great people. So. So my short talk today is kind of a bunch of trailers. That's like movie trailers, not trailer parks, I hope. Touching lightly on some matters we'll take up in more detail starting tomorrow night. I hope it's not too disconcertingly random. I think you can let it just wash over you. Maybe some of it will turn up in your mind again later tonight or during the day tomorrow. We've owned at least two other retreats by talking about the same fragment from the same koan. We'll do it again tonight to return to where we are. I want to start, though, by setting the context we'll drop it into this year, which is a little bit different. At Desert Rain, we've been spending time in our study group the last few months with Shito Shichens taking part in the gathering, which Connie mentioned. And you may know that as the Sandokai by Sekito, depending on where you usually sit. And we did that after studying the Heart Sutra. When I talk about Joan, by the way, it's, unless otherwise noted, always Joan Sutherland, our founding teacher. So, as Joan emphasizes, while Shito's poem is not replacing the understanding of the Heart Sutra with his own, he's adding his understanding. The Heart Sutra is such an emptiness sutra, Joan says, an expression of everything as seen from the perspective of the vastness. And Shito is saying, this is what it looks like in the world of phenomena. When you put them together, you've got the whole thing. As I know most of you know, Shito's poem tells a kind of origin story that begins with unfathomable mystery, so not knowing is most intimate. Stresses both interpermeation or emptiness and the blam aspect of form, but doesn't think the vastness will save us from the complications of causes and karma. I'll quote just a couple salient passages. This is from John Tarrant and Joan Sutherland's translation of the poem. The mysterious source of the bright is clear and unstained. Branches of light stream from that dark. Trying to control things is only delusion, but hanging onto the absolute isn't enlightenment either. We and everything we perceive are interwoven and not interwoven, and this interweaving continues on and on while each thing stands in its own place. And a bit further on, the darkness is inside the bright, but don't look only with the eyes of the dark. As Norman and other teachers who comment on this mention, bright and dark tend to do different things at different places in the poem, but just in general, darkness is another name for emptiness or the vastness, and the bright seems to be the world of form usually, as it is here. So the darkness is inside the bright, but don't look only with the eyes of the dark. The brightness is inside the dark, but don't look only through the eyes of the bright. Bright and dark are a pair, like front foot and back foot walking. Each thing by nature has worth, but we notice it is shaped by circumstances. Things fit together like boxes and lids, while the absolute is like arrows meeting in midair. Boxes and lids don't always fit together smoothly. And if I asked you how you've been shaped by your circumstances, you probably won't be talking only happy talk. So Shito doesn't leave out the bumps. Norman Fisher talking about a moment in Uji where Dogen says that one thing doesn't hinder another, says that's a startling statement since it runs so strongly counter to our ordinary experience in what Joan calls the billiard balls on a table world of Nirmanakaya. So Norman's saying that sense that one thing doesn't hinder another, which is quite beautiful, is also startling because that's not how the world usually seems or works for us. If you're the billiard ball that's been struck, you're likely to have a view of what happened to you, plus a model for how to make things go better next time. The world of multiplicity is a world of opinions, models, prognostications, and preferences and aversions. And while many of them may be helpful, a lot of them probably won't be. But then there's the more general question of the price we pay, not just for being opinionated, but in a structural sense, for having opinions and views, for being a human speaking self set over against the objects we designate, categorize, and judge in our assertions. Tremendous practical benefits accrue for sure. It's pragmatically useful a lot of the time, and often fun, malicious fun or otherwise, to triage and manipulate stuff. But there's also a cost, actually a high one. If that's not a predicament, that's entirely escapable, since we're in language now. How can we practice with that and perhaps turn it to advantage? And I think that's a question that really is lurking in Shitto's return to the world of karma and multiplicity. Here's our more or less annual Koan fragment, which doesn't have much obvious relation to all this. And this is, again, Yuan Wu's commentary, a little bit of it, from Case 20 of the Blue Cliff Record, which is Longya's meaning of coming from the West. Anyway, Yuan Wu says, "Haven't you heard? Wu She went to see Shitto. He had made an agreement with himself beforehand, saying, 'If there's a court at the first word, I'll stay. Otherwise, I'll go.'" That's meeting a teacher. Shitto just sat in his seat. She shook out his sleeves and went out. So apparently in old Chan, that's a sign of utter contempt. If you kind of flap your sleeves with somebody, it's like giving them, flipping them the bird a little bit. Sort of. So, all right. So he flapped his sleeves and went out. Shitto knew that Wu She was a vessel of truth, so he had extended his teaching to him by just sitting there. But She hadn't understood his meaning. He had announced his departure and gone out. When he got to the gate, Shitto called out to him, "Reverend!" When She looked back, Shitto said, "From birth to death, it's only this. Don't seek any more for anything else by turning your head and revolving your brain." At these words, She was greatly enlightened. It's only this. There's another koan that positions a variant phrase, "just this," as the answer to a more enigmatic and maybe profound question. What is this? Here's another koan that poses this question as a response to some grousing about endless karmic consciousness. Think whack billiard balls with opinions, and then turns a startling somersault. So I'm associating karmic consciousness with judgments, opinions, and reactions to things that have happened to us. So the world of endless judgment. So it's case 37 from the Book of Serenity, Yangshan's karmic consciousness. Guishan asked Yangshan, and they're in a school that's called the School of Equals, which was also something of a hermetic school that made use of magical symbols, but Guishan was somewhat senior. So Guishan asked Yangshan, "Suppose someone asks you out of the blue, 'Sentient beings have only endless karmic consciousness with no foundation to rely on.'" I'll read that again. So suppose somebody asks you out of the blue, "Sentient beings have only endless karmic consciousness with no foundation to rely on. How would you work with this?" If a student like that came, I'd call, "Hey, so-and-so." When the student turns his head, I'd say, "What is it?" Then I'd wait while he thinks about it. Then I'd say, "Not only is karmic consciousness endless, but there's no foundation to rely on." Guishan said, "Good." We'll come back to this tomorrow night, along with Shitto's It's Only This. Let's note for now that if you've got karmic consciousness shaped by causes and conditions that you tend to recycle, you've probably got a lot of opinions and views, not all of them serving you well. So, is Yangshan's intervention here bad news? Good news? A joke? A moment of free fall? A Trumpian wall? A gateless gate? Here's another koan, a well-known one, which we'll save for the koan seminar that resonates obliquely with some of these concerns. So we'll take this up toward the end of the week. Gateless Gate 29, Winung's temple flag. Two students were arguing about the temple flag flapping in the wind. One said, "The flag is moving." The other said, "The wind is moving." They argued back and forth, but couldn't agree. The sixth ancestor, Winung, said, "It's neither the wind nor the flag that moves. It's your mind that moves." The two students were struck with awe. Wu Men, who compiled the Gateless Gate, comments, "It is not the wind that moves. It is not the flag that moves. It is not the mind that moves. How do you see the ancestral teacher here?" That is, what do you make of Wu Men in this story? So next, entering full-blown movie trailer quick sequence mode, here are a few passages from Suzuki Roshi's book on Shitto's taking part in the gathering that we pondered in our study group. I have a hunch it might prove useful to loose them into the flow. They have something to do with views and opinions. And these passages are really wonderfully strange. They're really vintage Suzuki, I think. First, some remarks on what we might call ineffability. Whatever your mind can conceive is not the source itself. The source is something only a Buddha can know. Only when you practice Zazen do you have it. So then, a Buddha is anybody who practices Zazen, I guess. Bless you. It is not something you can taste. The true source is neither tasty nor tasteless. Often we feel that truth is something we should be able to see or figure out. But in Buddhism, that is not the truth. The truth is something beyond our ability to describe, beyond our thinking. Truth can also mean the wonderful source, wonderful beyond our description. This is the source of all being. So what I'm trying to introduce here is something about the play of opinions and judgments and this other thing that Suzuki is pointing at as adducing as in some way ineffable and not susceptible to opinion and judgment. And if that's true, then what about the world is only endless opinion and judgment with nothing else to rely on? And a bit further on, back to the Suzuki, enlightenment is not something you can experience, actually. It is beyond our experience. If someone says, "I have attained enlightenment," that is wrong. It means that person sticks to some explanation of enlightenment. That is delusion. At the same time, if you think that enlightenment is beyond our experience, something that you cannot experience, even so, enlightenment is there. So you cannot say there is no enlightenment or that there is enlightenment. Enlightenment is not something about which you can say there is or there is not. And at the same time, something you can't experience is enlightenment too. Say what? And here's Suzuki doubling down, commenting on re, the source of the teaching beyond words, beyond our thinking, as against g, the phenomenal something you can see, whatever is introduced into our consciousness is g and not re. We talk about emptiness, and you may think you understand it pretty well, but even though you can explain it pretty well, it is g, not re. Real emptiness will be experienced, not experienced, but realized by good practice. Given this ineffability, it's pretty startling, but entirely characteristic of Zen, that Suzuki also associates re with particularity, with Shitto's interwoven and not interwoven, the fact that each thing stands in its own place. So here's Suzuki again. Each one of us is the boss of the whole world. And when you have this understanding, you will realize that things are interrelated, yet they are also independent. Each one of us is completely and absolutely independent. There is nothing to compare. You are just you. So the various beings, I'm still quoting from the Suzuki, so the various beings that we see and hear are interrelated, but at the same time, each thing is absolutely independent and has its own value. This value we call re. Re is that which makes something meaningful, not just theoretical. Even though you don't attain enlightenment, we say you already have enlightenment. That enlightenment we call re. It is very strange that no two things are the same. There is nothing to compare yourself to, so you have your own value. That value is not a comparative value or an exchange value, so we don't get to have too many opinions about it. It is more than that. When you are just sitting zazen on the cushion, you have your own value. Although that value is related to everything, that value is also absolute. Maybe it is better not to say too much. Hakuin, the formless form, comes into form. Trailing off toward more randomness, here's a koan of sorts, a quasi-koan, a loose paraphrase of something Joan used to ask. Where is awakening? Okay, honoring Shitto's focus, I hope this turns out to be a retreat in which we don't scant multiplicity, causes and conditions, complexity, or their vexations. When you wake up early tomorrow morning, check and see if your delusions are all gone. If not, what then? Here's another koan. In no, that's mu to you guys in other traditions. Here's another koan. In no, there's no going and coming. In no, there's only going and coming. Clouds, sounds, rocks, breathing, delusions, silence, cranky grousing, presence, awareness, aversion, desire. What is this?